and they see my product, it is an exact match. There's no question about it. They put that in, they see my product. Now they may choose a different product, but mine is an exact match for what they're looking for.
Thanks for subscribing to the ZonCon podcast, the podcast all about Amazon conversations. These are the tips and tricks to become an Amazon millionaire. Here is your host, Andrew Erickson. He is all things Amazon, and so is this podcast. Let's have an Amazon conversation.
Hey guys, welcome back to the ZonCon podcast. This is Andrew Erickson, your host as always. Today I'm here with one of my really good friends. She is a person I know from the Titan Network. Her name is Jacqueline Torr, and she is based in Florida. She is just a seven-figure seller, pretty regular, amazing person with an amazing story and has a lot of insight on product selection. And I figure, you know what? Product selection is one of the most important parts of the business. And so I thought, Jacqueline, you're like one of my go-to talkers on product selection. You have a really fun, unique business. And also, Jacqueline has a really cool claim to fame. And I'll let you tell me your interesting little fact there, Jacqueline. So welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me. So the only, I think, interesting thing people say to me a lot is, how did I get a seven-figure business without using PPC? And the answer is, I didn't know how to do PPC, and that's why I didn't use it. But beyond that, how did it happen completely? I'm not 100% sure. So.
Nice. Yeah. So you got to seven figures in sales without using advertising. That blows my mind. It's something like usually you start advertising right away and usually you start hemorrhaging money right away. So maybe we all don't need as much PPC as we think. But what happened when you changed your strategy and started adding PPC?
So I just started doing PPC. I mean, I was doing it previously, but like a small auto campaign or something of that nature. So, you know, I probably did like maybe 40,000 in PPC to get to the million. But I'm just kind of figuring that out because I just started doing it in September and I hired an agency. And fourth quarter is really big for me. I'm in the gift niche. So I kind of had to take that with a grain of salt. So now that we have like one quarter in, I'm really learning PPC now and seeing what the metrics look like. But so far, I've had a good 2022. So I'm going to say, yay, PPC.
So there you go. All right. So we are bullish on PPC then. We're bullish on advertising.
Well, I mean, I do think that it makes a difference because I haven't really launched anything new. And, you know, we're coming into the end of the fourth quarter. And so I did a little over 2 million last year and I'm about 650 this year so far. So I'm assuming that's with the help of PPC, but again, with Amazon, you have these ups and downs and it's just trying to figure out like kind of what's causing that.
You've done 650 in the first quarter.
Yeah, I'm about there now.
Great. So you're definitely on track for a multi-million dollar year then.
Right. I feel really good about this year. And so, but for me, you know, one of the things I'm doing now is learning some of those fundamentals of PPC that I didn't know before. And it's not something that's very easy to learn and to know all the metrics and stuff. So I'm actually have a couple other friends that I know from the Titan Network that are helping me learn PPC. I'm running some of my own campaigns right now, even though I have an agency doing my main PPC and trying to really learn the metrics of it all. So
I want to explore that a little bit. Why are you learning PPC? And it's a good lesson for all of us, right? Like, why learn it if you just hired it away?
So one of the things is that I realized that I grew so quickly that I didn't really do my business with a blueprint. There was no intention behind it. I mean, I had the intention of, you know, starting a business and growing it and what have you. But because I was making my own products up until September, I didn't have time to learn all of the fundamental building blocks of making and growing an Amazon business or an e-commerce business. And so now that I have more time, I want to step back and learn some of those so that when I'm hiring, like I don't have a team, it's just me. So when I'm hiring people, I'll understand what I need them to do. Because nobody's going to love your business and care about your business and grow your business like you are. So it's hard for me to know, like, is there wasted ad spend? Are there keywords I shouldn't be having a campaign on without actually knowing? So although I trust the person doing it, I still feel like you need to have at least some knowledge. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Totally agree. I think it's good. You need to know enough to know how to hire and then how well they're doing. And it's okay. Sometimes we have like sort of best practices, right? Like, well, best practices, PPC should be ACOS and tacos and stuff like that. Those are just different metrics inside of PPC. I think it's really good to know a good fundamental amount about the subject so that you can hire and manage effectively.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, I'm looking to sell now. And as if I sell or don't sell, I'm going down that path, or I start another brand, I want to move forward with intention. And so I feel as if this is a good time to start learning some of the things that I didn't take the time to do previously.
Nice. And so I heard you drop it there that you made all your stuff yourself. You slid that little fact in there. So, and that's how you got up to $1 million mark, is you were literally like putting stuff together and selling it on Amazon and Etsy too. You're pretty big on Etsy, right?
No, I have not done Etsy. Like I have
really?
Done
Etsy. Dude, start Etsy right now. It'll be great.
I have a friend that is like a number one seller, like a top seller on Etsy. And he constantly tells me I need to be on Etsy. But I was so busy just trying to keep 2 to 3 weeks of product in Amazon that I worried about nothing else. I was just constantly kitting products, making products and sending them in and stocking out and then trying to keep this like kind of hamster wheel going of, you know, making my own products to sell, to where, you know, once I hit the million, I was crying because we just couldn't do anything.
Good tears or sad tears or frustration tears?
It was really because we had to do FBM with inventory limits at Amazon, and we were literally doing this in my house. So there was no warehouse, there was nothing. So I did hire a kitting company. So that was the end of 2020, like $1 million, tears, I'm exhausted. I hired a kitting company. So this last year was much easier once they got started in like September. Because my products are unique, I just raised the price by the amount the kitting company charged me. So it was favorable for me too, because I wasn't 10 hours, 12 hours a day making product.
Nice. Why didn't you just hire earlier?
Well, I did. Like once I went through that process, December of 2020, into a state of tears, I decided I had to hire. It was like my number one thing. And so I interviewed some kitting companies. I found one, but the issue was that I had all my product, all my raw materials in Florida, and they're in Missouri. So I basically waited for my inventory from China to go to them and then purchase the rest of my supplies I buy from the US to go to them. And with delays due to COVID, with shipping, as everybody knows, last year, they didn't get the container. Even though I ordered in March, they did not get the containers until August. So because of that, they didn't really start going until the end of August. But they were able to help me get through the fourth quarter, and that was what was important. We were also a little smarter with the stuff here. We had like 5 storage units full of ready-to-go product for the fourth quarter so that we didn't have to be in the same predicament we were in the year before.
Nice, man. See, these are the trials and tribulations that we learn as we go along the way, right?
So sometimes things just take longer. Like you have the intention to do something, but it doesn't mean it happens right away, especially when you're talking about shipments from China.
Nice. And so let's dive into product selection. So you have this really fun, unique way of looking at data and kind of figuring, trying to be creative inside of the data walls, right? So you kind of explained to me like a little kind of like a three part thing of like how you look at it. So why don't you give me sort of your outline on how you look at product selection, and then we'll dive right into it.
So when I started my business, I just was what I say more of your traditional entrepreneur, maybe. Like, I had a product. I wasn't really looking at data. I didn't even think to look, could it be sold on Amazon? I just sent it into Amazon to see what would happen. So it was definitely a slow start because I had to rank organically to get sales going. I mean, I still sell that first product. However, now that I know more, you know, you know more, you do better. So I look at product. I still kind of start with a product instead of starting with data. I feel like you have to do one or the other. You either start with the data. So whatever tool you're using is screaming, sell a spatula. And then you're going to go and find which spatula you want to sell. Or you have this amazing spatula that you know would be great. And then you go and see, is there room in the market? So you use your tools. Is there room in the market? Is there good keywords for this? Is there buyer intent? And that's where you kind of have to have both, though, because once you know you've used whatever tool you're using, I use Titan Tools, that there is room in the market, you know that there are, you know, enough keywords that have decent search volume, that your price point is good, that your ROI is good, then you know that you have the ability to do this product. And that's where the hard part comes in. You have to differentiate your product.
Nice. So let's expand that a little bit. So we come with a product idea. Mm-hmm. We have an idea, and then we go into the data. And you mentioned a few things there, reviews and ROI and other stuff like that. How do you look at ROI? And just for those who are not initiated, ROI is return on investment, and that's how much money, basically how much money it requires to start the product, and then how much money you'll profit from that product. Generally, every dollar you put in for the production value, the production cost, you want to get at least a dollar back, if not $2 back. And so putting $1 into production, let's say I spend $10,000 for a production order, and eventually I think I'll profit $10,000 from this, that would be 100% ROI, 100% return on my money. That's what the ROI is, just to clarify for people. But you tell me how each of those metrics you said, I kind of look at this, kind of look at that. Can you expand a little bit, like what parts do you look at, and what's like great and what's like not so good, just so we can kind of know like the guardrails that we want to stay in?
So for me, I do tend to start with the product first. I will see something I like, or I will, you know, I'll just be on Etsy one day and see something I like, or not on the high street, you know, I'll be on some website or in some store and I like this product. So from that, then I go and see, is there buyer intent? That's my number one metric. If there is no buyer intent on Amazon, then it doesn't make sense to launch something. Like, nobody's going to Amazon and putting in Mars Rover, right? Nobody's looking for that there. So I feel like if there aren't buyers already there, then that is a no-go for me.
How do you know the buyer intent? What's like, do you use a tool?
For buyer intent, I'm looking at exact search terms. So say it's a Mother's Day gift, and I will look up Mother's Day gift from daughter, Mother's Day gift for grandma, Mother's Day gift from son. I want to know that there are 10 to 15, for me, that's what I'm looking for, 10 to 15. Other people have different metrics. Solid search terms, meaning they have decent search volume, which could be 1,000 searches a month, could be 500 searches a month. Like, I like a little bit of a range. And I know when somebody puts in that search term or keyword, depending on what side of that you're on, and they see my product, it is an exact match. There's no question about it. They put that in, they see my product. Now, they may choose a different product, but mine is an exact match for what they're looking for. So that's the number one thing I look at.
So for example, let's do an example. So you usually call this like a highly relevant keyword. So it will highly do like you tell me if I Father's Day, is that a highly relevant keyword?
No, not for me. I think it's too broad. And I think eventually you would get there, but I kind of want to go down a little bit just to make sure that I'm able to capture some of the lower hanging fruit before I'm going to go after something like Father's Day gift, which is going to get super competitive, super fast.
So a highly relevant might be like a mustache care kit, right?
Well, it might be. But in my world, because I'm in the gift niche, I'm looking at 100% gift terms. So for me, a highly relevant term would be like Father's Day gift from daughter.
Mm.
So that is going to be searched less, but I want to make sure there's like 10 to 15 of those that not everybody's just thinking about. Because if you're selling like a mustache kit, then you might go after Father's Day gift. But sometimes you won't go down deep enough into like the depths of, you know, Father's Day gift for first time father from daughter. That's like a real search term. So I go really long and try to find those.
And you said you want to have like 500 or 1,000 searches a month. What tools are you using for that?
I use Titan Tools. So I've also used Helium 10, and I'll also look at Brand Analytics. So nice. Like for myself, I'll go to Brand Analytics and just put in that we're talking about Father's Day. So Father's Day, and then I'll download it all and I'll pull every single gift term out of that to see where's my depth here. And there could be hundreds of them, nice. But I just want to make sure like I'm not always sticking at. So that search frequency rank. I don't want to search frequency rank of every single one of them being like 1,000 or 10,000, because obviously that's opposite of search volume, but it's very competitive. So I want to get down there, like search frequency rank and like the 200,000, 300,000. I'm okay with that.
Nice. And that's brand, just to clarify. So Brand Analytics is data that comes directly from Amazon. You have to have brand registry, you have to have like a trademark brand registered on Amazon to get that data. And that's like people kind of consider that like very reliable because from Amazon, right? But there's other tools that kind of make the data a lot easier to use, but it's not from Amazon. I use those tools all the time. Titan has its own set of tools. Helium 10 has its own set of tools. Jungle Scout has basically the same kind of thing. And people kind of say like, oh, it's not from Amazon, you can't trust it. I'm like, I find it to be pretty good, honestly. All those different tools, right? But they're estimates. Everything's an estimate, right? But do you really care if the search term is 1,000 or if it's 900 or if it's 1,100 searches per month? Like, that doesn't really matter, the exact number. The idea is, like what you said, Jacqueline, is the intent. 1,000-ish people are searching for this term. And if there's 1,000 people searching for it, there's 1,000 people who are likely to buy my product on that search term. And if I can do that for, like you said, 10 to 15 search terms, plus you have a couple hundred kind of like really long tail stuff that you'll pop up on, then that's a perfect product that has that intent there. So we have search term intent. What are the other things you look at in terms of the data?
So I am big on ROI. Now, if you're going from the data approach, so you know that, again, if it's a spatula, say, that the average ROI is 100, then if you're going to make something extra special so you can charge a little bit more, then you could get that higher. But for me, I like 150, even with the shipping as it was, because you just never know what's going to happen. Like, you don't know if the price is going to go up or the shipping is going to go up or your PPC is going to go up. So I like to do 150 as my minimum. I won't touch anything that's not 100%. And if I'm looking at the data first and I haven't specifically have all of my cogs in place yet, then if that says like 75, I still will go down that path because I want to get solid numbers from my supplier and figure out like what is it really? So if something doesn't pass, like if you have these, I know Titan has tiers, And I know Helium 10, they have, you know, their training and they have like all these metrics. So if it doesn't quite pass, but it's still interesting and I'm like, there is good buyer intent, I feel like there is some room in the market, I will go and find out my own numbers to figure out, can I get my ROI above 100? I like 150, but I won't go below 100. It's just too hard on cash flow.
I like that. Yeah, I agree that I think that if you're under 100%, you can still get a quote. And I'm always like, I'm very skeptical. I'm like, okay, this product, like, it's great. It's amazing. Oh my God, I love this product, but it's probably 100% ROI. And let me go get a quote. The quote brings us up to 120. 120, we start thinking like, if it's a great product, maybe we can do it. But we, yeah, also love the 150%. But I like that little caveat you put there, that having the supplier or actually getting a proper quote is a great idea.
I really think you need to get a proper quote. And you know what I tell, if I'm talking to somebody who's a newer seller and they honestly look at me like I'm insane, but I'm like, when you're getting your quote, ask that supplier how many units fit in a 20-foot container and what is the price. And the reason to ask them is because you want to know when you're getting towards a full container load. You want to know your orders going there. You also want to know like, hey, I'm at 100% right now, but if I got a full container, I would be at 120 or 130%. So I like to have that information up front. So that way when I'm planning out, like, is this really a viable product for the long run? I know where I could see, I know what's at the end of the tunnel, because you're not always going to be buying MOQ. So I like to have those numbers up front.
That's a great, yes. Write that down. I feel like a lot of people don't talk about that. Like the MOQ of 500, it's very hard. The shipping is not very good on 500 units, right? So what we found is that the worst thing to ship is about 1 cubic meter, 2 cubic meters, which is roughly a pallet. One pallet's the worst amount of volume to ship because it's just too big for an airplane and it's just too small for a boat. You can do it, it's just gonna be really expensive, right? And so we'll find that sometimes, yeah, we don't want to risk too much on a new product. So we'll maybe buy like 2 pallets, right? And then our shipping is, I don't know, just say it's $3 or $4. Let's say it's $4 per unit, right? Because it's really high because it's right. You know, small volume, right? Well, the next order, we might order 4 times as much, but the shipping's only twice as much, right? So now our shipping goes from $4 per unit. But now per unit goes down by half. Sorry, I'm probably using too many numbers here. But the conclusion is order more and you'll get much cheaper shipping. And so, yeah, I love that. I love that tip of like asking how many units would fit in a 20-foot container.
Right. And I was one of my products, I was buying like 2,000 to 3,000 units at a time. And I went to Canton Fair and then somebody's like, oh, we only do 20-foot containers as a minimum. And I was like, well, how many fit in a 20-foot container? They're like, probably 3,800 to 4,000. Like, I was so close to a full container. I could have been saving money. And so it's one of those things where, like, I spent, whatever, $10,000 to go to Canton Fair. And I saved, like, $80,000 on my next order because I learned something, which if I had just asked from the beginning, I would have, you know, been better off. So
nice. Oh, that's good. I love that. And so one fun little rule of thumb is if you fill 70% or three quarters of a shipping container, the next quarter, the next 30% is free effectively. Cause that's how the thing scales, right? Cause the overhead cost of doing like a half of a container, there's extra cost there. So once you get to that 70% mark, just fill a whole container because they effectively get free shipping on that last 30%. So that's great, Jacqueline. I love that. So ROI. Okay, so we have buyer intent, ROI. What other metrics are we looking at?
So for me, I also like to make sure that I feel like at those lower search term, like the lower volume search terms. So like, again, back to our Father's Day example, like Father's Day gift for first time father from daughter. When I put that in, I want to make sure and still using, and again, it's whatever kind of tiers or method that you're using. But I like to make sure that there are some sellers that I can immediately compete with, meaning they're going to have lower reviews, you know, say a couple of the sellers under 300 reviews with, you know, less than $10,000 of sales. So there's a lot of different methods. I know Titan has their method. I know Helium 10 has a method for that. Tomar has a method. So you can definitely find which of that kind of criteria you're looking for. But I like to make sure I could compete on the longer tail. So for me, I do look at that. And then I go immediately to looking at, you know, my product. And can I differentiate a product? All the products I sell on Amazon, I'm the only seller. Now, that doesn't mean somebody couldn't buy something else. They just couldn't buy my exact product. And I like that because it helps me control price. I never had a hijacker. And it really kind of insulates me from that price war at the bottom. So I need to make sure, like, even if it's all like green lights, go, 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 I want to make sure I'm not selling something that looks exactly like what somebody else has. And for me, I am more creative, I feel like, so I will start searching. Say it's a spatula or a Father's Day gift. I'm putting that in Etsy and Crate and Barrel and Google and Not on the High Street and all of these different sources to see what else is out there, Pinterest, that is different from what's already on Amazon. Because I know the buyer intent is there. That was number one, right? We know people are looking for Father's Day gifts. We know people are looking for spatulas. Now I need to see, can I bring something to the table that is of high quality at a good price point that's not already being sold on Amazon? And oh, that's another thing. Quality is everything. Don't put a cheap product out there. You're going to get slaughtered at the end.
Nice. I love it.
I feel like, and if it's harder to find on something like Alibaba, all the better.
You mentioned, so there's a website called Not the High Street. Is that the?
Not on the High Street. It's kind of like it.
You said that. I thought you meant don't go to the High Street, go online. And I was like, not the highstreet.com. Okay.
Not on the highstreet.com. It's a British site. It has really cool stuff on it. I mean, you can look like the Grommet, Uncommon Goods, these type of places. And if you don't know, so say it's the spatula. If you don't know anything about that, like maybe you like to cook, but you're not a chef, go find one. I guarantee you, in wherever you live, there are restaurants with professional chefs. Go find one. Ask them how to fix it. If it's a gardening thing, go to the gardening club. Doing the work on the front end is going to save you a lot of time on the back end because you're producing something unique and that's quality because you're asking people who do this every day, what would make this better? And so I just think it's key to come up with something different. And so for me, when I'm doing that, like I have 4 shipments I'm waiting on right now from different vendors from Etsy. And the reason I'm doing that is because I had an idea. I do not want to go back and forth with my suppliers in China because of the language barrier. And so I will find somebody on Etsy. I will say, you make this that's wooden and I'm trying to do this. Could you make that for me? And then have them make it and send it to me. And then once exactly what I want, I ship it to my supplier in China and say, reproduce this.
Nice. I love it. And do you produce the exact same product or do you add something different to it?
Yeah, normally I'm producing the exact same product. Now, sometimes I'm not finding that exact product on Etsy, but there's so many artists there that you can find somebody who works with metal or works with wood or does something similar to what you're looking for. And you could get what they're already doing, but then you can have them make modifications to it for you. Because they're already producing these individually most of the time.
Nice. And that's one thing I found. So I love these techniques. They're totally resonate with me because we do similar things. And so I love this kind of like look at the other sites. And we love Etsy for product ideas. And I feel like there's this thing where I kind of make like a sort of a vision board, but not like it's like it's like a product vision board sort of, and I'll have like, okay, I'll just take pictures from Etsy and Walmart and uncommongoods.com and stuff like that and put them on a board and just like on a, I use Adobe Illustrator just to kind of make a that board, right? And I'll just say like, okay, here, like, here's an example of like how the hooks work. And here's an example of how the size of it. And here's an example of the coloring I like and stuff like that. And so I find that sharing the actual pictures with the supplier works really well. I mean, you've taken a step above and actually like ship the physical products to the suppliers as well.
It really, if I'm doing something that they're not already, if it's easy to explain, then that's one thing. But if it's where, and I'm very, picky and I want it to be perfect. So if it's not, I know I can easily come to that with no language barrier. And, you know, when you say, is it exactly like it? Sometimes it's very similar to something I found on Etsy. But so there was this book, it's called Steal Like an Artist, I think. Austin Kleon, I think. Anyway, I think the book's called Steal Like an Artist. And the whole premise is there's nothing new out there. Everybody's stealing from other people, and they might be improving upon it or changing it some. And then there's this famous thing in Titan, R&D, rip off and duplicate. So I do think you have to make it your own. I think you need to make it high quality. I think you have to, you know, have good packaging in my niche, because it's the gift niche. The packaging has to be really nice. So I think you can add to it. But I definitely think, like, don't just see something and go, oh, that's awesome, but somebody has already doing it. Like, obviously not if it's patented, right? But most of the stuff I'm doing is not stuff that people would patent. So yeah, I think get inspiration ideas where you can. And if that's not you, go find somebody who it is. Because I think it's critical. I think you can start with the data all day long and for it to scream, this is a great product, this is a great niche. But if you're not bringing something different to the table, at the end, you're in a price war. Or that's at least my experience from talking to people who do sell more of the classic Me Too product.
Nice. Yep. I totally agree. And the thing I always love to say is be different to be better. Or different is better than being better. Right.
Right.
Because especially when you're online, you can't, it's hard to say like, yo, hey, this fabric, this is objectively better. This thing, it feels better. It doesn't tear as much. It's harder to say that. You can just say it. Yeah, this is much better fabric. You can say it, but you can't really show it. You can't show it on a listing. Right. But you can show fabric with a different print on it, right? And you can show a fabric that's a different size. You can show these things that are just slightly different, right? And so, yes, have the higher quality fabric so that eventually you'll get better reviews, right, as time goes on. But then also make it different. Add that pattern. Change the size, add the hook, include an extra thing inside the kit, whatever it is, make it different, because different is better than better.
And usually if you're making something that's a higher quality or something that is better, it's going to be a higher price point. And if you can't show that in your main image on Amazon, it's a huge problem for you. And I find, again, if you're not a photographer, you might not know how you can make that apparent. Go to ask your photographer, hey, this is the change I'm going to make. And I have to be able to show this change on a white background. Can this be done? And see. And again, it's a lot of work on the front end. And I know, because we're friends, I know your origin story. You did a lot of work on the front end, but you have to. I feel like it makes it so much easier down the road when you're not having to defend your ranking and defend your price. Because you have a good product that nobody else is selling.
Hey guys, if you found value from this episode, I would love if you could tell the world. And if you don't want to tell the entire world, I would love for you to tell iTunes at least. If you can go to iTunes, if you listen to this podcast on iTunes, go ahead and go leave us a review. I have a few here that are amazing that I love to read out. I read every single review that's posted. This one is a review from Amber K. If you're looking for a podcast to efficiently learn hacks to grow your Amazon business, business, this is it. Andrew's wealth of knowledge is abundant and generously shares it all for this podcast. The latest and greatest information to push to your business to the right, to the next level is right here. Stop reading this review and tap play. Nice. Oh, I love it, Amber K. Thank you so much for doing that. So if you think you have a review that is equal or better than Amber K's, or worse, whatever. If you don't like me, that's cool. You can tell me too, whatever. Go to iTunes, leave a review. Also, Spotify now is allowing ratings. So please go onto Spotify and super easy. You don't even have to write anything. You just hit 5 stars and leave that review. You know, as an Amazon seller, how important reviews are to your business. I am asking you, at the goodness of your heart, please leave me a review as well. Thanks.